Do you have any memories playing video games? Was it that time you got the high score on Space Invaders? Or was it the first time in Super Mario Bros. That you jumped at the top of the flagpole? Maybe it's when you first got your Game Boy and thrashed all your friends in a game of Pokemon. Many of us have warm memories playing retro games, and many of us today continue to play them. My name's Sean Allsop, and in this program, I'm going to find out why some people prefer retro gaming, what psychological attachments games have on us, and how nostalgia is affecting the video game industry today. But first, to understand retro gaming, we have to look at its early history, which started years ago with a very simplistic game of virtual tennis.
The history of video games really begins in 1972.
To learn more, I spoke to Dean Swain, host of the Retro Asylum podcast.
The Magnavox Odyssey was the very first console that was being made in the early 70s.
Magnavox presents Odyssey, the electronic game of the future.
Atari actually saw this console on show at a toy fair, and it basically played a variant of Pong. And they actually created Pong. Pong hit the arcades, and it all goes from there, basically.
Pong and those types of games were more toys than arcades.
Jamie Madigan, psychologist and author of The Psychology of Video Games.
Toys than video games, as we think of them today. So the rise of gaming, the point that most people would probably point to would be like during the 1980s when home-based systems like Atari,
simply more fun and games.
You know, the Atari 2600 started to take off, and that was sort of the first boom.
And then you'd have the Japanese try and get in on the market with the likes of Space Invaders. And then, obviously, bigger hits such as Pac-Man, Donkey Kong in 1981. Nintendo jumped in, obviously, with Donkey Kong, and they released lots of games, really big hits of the arcade. Pac-Man was massive. So, yeah, during the early 80s, that's when it all kicked off with the video games.
And it continued through the early 90s to include, you know, like the Nintendo Entertainment System, the NES, the SNES, Sega, those types of home-based systems. Right around that same time is when a lot of that started coming out. You saw Nintendo releasing a lot of their sort of famous characters like Mario and Donkey Kong, and then you started seeing Sonic come along during the early 90s as a sort of an answer to Nintendo's success in that area. Metroid, like all these sort of famous long-running franchises and characters and mascots, you know, they started around that era, probably the late 80s. Early 90s is when they really became household names, especially for the people that were into games.
Video games have been part of our lives for many years, but why do some of us continue to play classic games instead of contemporary ones?
Hi, I'm Karina Brody. I'm 28 years old and I still play old games. Whenever I'm on the go, I'll take my Game Boy. If I want to play a puzzle, I'll play, there's Tetris or Adventure Zelda. And but if it's like a long journey and I want to play a role-playing game or something, I'll play Pokemon. But for easy stuff, I'll just play classic Kirby. I've been playing them since I was young, so it's so easy to get into now because I'm just so familiar with it, and that's what I like about it.
They're pick-up-and-play titles. You don't need much time to play them. You can have a blast for half an hour, 15 minutes even. And they are very difficult to master, but they're easy to get into, so they appeal a lot more.
I don't really play any like new games, basically. They're really time-consuming now and complicated to like understand. So when I want to like fancy killing time and whatnot, I usually put in an old cartridge and start playing. I prefer it because like now there's like tutorials and the old games, they don't have tutorials and they don't have like these giant plots to focus on. You can just literally press start and get going and start playing.
It's a convenient way of playing games. They're short, they're snappy. I think the graphical appeal is there. They look like video games. I'm just drawn back every time to the 8-bit and 16-bit look and sound of a game. It's magical.
Whilst the more simplistic gameplay seems to be the main reason of players choosing these classic titles, nostalgic memory also plays a big role in this choice.
Also, it reminds me of when I first started these, playing these games, and I used to play them when I was a kid, and I feel the older you get, it's nicer to look back at that time, and nice to see how when you did first play this, or when I first played this, and like how happy it made me feel, and how happy I was when I was younger, and for all of those reasons, I keep going back to these games just so I can get those memories again.
You know, I would say that any game that elicits the emotion nostalgia would probably count as a nostalgic game. And nostalgia, you know, if you talk to psychologists and people who study it, it is generally considered an emotion, you know, along the lines of any other like joy or anger or anything like that. But it is sort of a bittersweet remembering of things from the past and things which, especially things which are no longer available to us or no, you know, things that we can't necessarily go back to, but we remember them fondly. And if you study the types of things that people talk about when you ask them to get nostalgic or when you induce nostalgia, you know, they tend to talk about things that made them happy. Humans, we're sort of biased to remember things better than they were, and we're biased to remember the good over the bad. We do tend to remember the silver lining and not the cloud, you know, from our past. It's just sort of one of the ways that we protect our ego and protect our self-esteem and sort of get through the days sometimes is by having this bias towards positivity. And so as a result, we remember the great experiences that we have with old video games, but we don't remember the hassle that we went through to get like our modem, our 2600K modem to work so that we could play those games with our friends. Or we don't remember the lag. We don't remember those types of experiences. I think there definitely is a rose-tinted phenomenon. I sometimes refer to it as like the rose-tinted heads-up display in video games in particular.
Along with retro gaming is vintage gaming, with players choosing the original hardware for a more authentic gaming experience.
I still play on the older consoles and games because, well, like the way vinyl has come back or anything vintage, it feels more authentic. It brings you back to where this all started from. Like, it's old is the new. It takes you back to a time when we didn't have all these new electronics. You're literally back to the basics, and it feels better doing that. You're doing it for the fun and for the experience.
Dean has a gaming shed of consoles and titles he's been collecting for years.
Dean, I've just come in here. It's kind of a wonderland of past game titles I would have found around so many friends' house, and it's displayed so majestically. It's like the most ideal aisle in Toys R Us.
It resembles a sort of video game museum with classic relics of the most popular and unknown memorabilia of gaming history.
This is before the likes of the Game Boy. This was a Nintendo Game & Watch, and each game was separate. So this is Super Mario Brothers. These were the early 1980s equivalent of a Game Boy. So you'd take this in your school blazer, top mm-hmm. pocket, and play it at break time if you wasn't playing football or something. Great little games, little display on them. And this one scrolled along. It's very jerky compared to modern stuff.
It looks like something they'd now give away for free in a Happy Meals.
Yeah, they probably would. Very vintage technology. You had an alarm clock on this, so this used to sit by my bedside table and wake me up in the morning. I'd probably have a quick go of it as I got up, and took it to school with me and kept me entertained for many years.
Well, it's a charming little device, and I can see now the biggest handheld device prior the iPhone, the Game Boy, a name so recognised throughout the world. Oh, is it the original box?
It's the original box. It's very nice box. It came with Tetris.
Tetris as well. That was a big title, wasn't it?
That was very, very big. And that appealed to females as well as males, which at the time was quite a big thing. You know, so very good system.
There we go. Imagine how many Christmas mornings were spent ripping that box apart.
I wonder. Shall we put these in quickly and have a look? We'll see.
That's like a brick.
Yeah, it's big. And this was as portable as it got.
Last battery in,
because there was actually another system released around the same time, slightly later, which was the Atari Lynx. There's a box up there for it. I'll put a game in there.
I'll be delicate.
So yeah, but that's where it started, really, handheld gaming with the Game Boy, and then it was the Atari Lynx. There's a box up there, and it was probably twice the width of a Game Boy laying on his side.
Why do you think people are more fond of cartridges? They say CDs are soulless. They say, but surely it's more about capability. I'm not quite sure. What is it about cartridges that just gets people excited?
Hard to say, really. For me, having a ZX Spectrum and a Commodore 64, you loaded games up by cassette, and it would take, on a 1-to-8K spectrum, probably about 10 minutes to load a game. Whereas with a cartridge, you slot it in, switch the machine on, and the game is there. So it's instant. That was the appeal for me. But there is, I mean, some of these cartridges here, these were by Parker Brothers for the Atari VCS and 2600. And they're angled at the ends. And there's a certain appeal to those that I love. I love the physical thing in my hand. It's strange, but
get out.
There we go, there's Popeye, for example. And as you can see from, this is an Atari-made cartridge, which is just a rectangle, whereas the Parker Brothers are angled. And so were some of, it's strange, this one is very angled, but I don't think that's as nice.
Space Attack.
Yeah, it just looks cheap. Cheaply made, whereas,
do you think there's some sort of charm attached to?
There is,
and obviously the packaging, it just shouts out character.
With Atari 2600 games, very few boxes have lasted. They were made out of cardboard, just like a lot of the Nintendo stuff, and you'll find most people have only got the cartridges left. They're all boxed and they're all nice, really. They're in
and
good condition.
Are the consoles in them?
All the cartridges are in them.
I haven't seen a boxed N64 game since I was six.
They don't last too well.
And the amount of times they'll actually just ripped apart, because it's so easy to Christmas Day rip. I
absolutely.
They
when you're younger,
long.
You don't realise how fragile the stuff is or how valuable stuff can be. So, and it's worrying. I've got to speak into the rest of the team, you know, and we was discussing this, just how much of this stuff is still being thrown away.
And I'm looking around and I see the Sega Mega Drive, the pinnacle of Sega's.
Yes.
Sega's time. Now, this is a Mega, not the Genesis. Is that a different system?
No, it's actually the same system.
Refusing to resist temptation, Dean allowed me to play a childhood favourite game of mine, Sonic the Hedgehog, on my first console, the Sega Mega Drive. Soon into playing it, a wave of nostalgic memories started rushing back to me, faster than the Blue Hedgehog himself.
See, my family made out that the Nintendo 64 wasn't released until 1999. So they gave us a Mega Drive for years, until we started catching on at school.
Yeah.
I used to play this a lot.
The place was a retro haven, which really showcased how impressive vintage consoles and games look in the flesh.
But it's just a casual, I've just jumped into the game so easily, you know?
Yeah, this is the thing, man, I'm so easy to get into.
In seconds.
Like other things vintage, it's no surprise there's value in retro gaming today.
How much money is in vintage gaming?
Quite a lot.
More now than before?
More now than ever, I would say. Especially anything that's branded Sega or Nintendo, especially Nintendo. People don't realise how much this stuff's worth, and it's a part of our history.
Companies are quite aware of gamers' demand for nostalgia. With much-loved game franchises from the past being rebooted, like Crash Bandicoot.
The ones that we're familiar with are the ones that we get, that get our attention, and the ones that we think about, and the remakes and the rehashes and the relaunches and the reboots are sort of, they're headline attention because they're interesting because we're familiar with them. And the things that we're more familiar with are easier for us to remember. And because they're easier for us to remember, we ascribe more sort of importance or, you know, a higher place. We think of them as more representative of what video games are, simply because they're easier to call to mind.
Now, even classic consoles, decades old, being re-released.
The thing that everyone's after is a classic NES mini system, which plays 30 games.
And you can play them only on the Nintendo Entertainment System. Now you're playing with power.
Whereas you've got a PlayStation 4 Pro, which plays all the latest games, but people just don't seem to be as interested. They're just going for the nostalgia factor.
Developers themselves have been capitalising on this retro revival, with a growing number of popular game titles being released that look and play as if they were designed decades ago.
They are using the 16-bit look as, if nothing else, just like a hook, you know, something to get people's attention, something to elicit that nostalgia and use it to their benefit as a form of marketing or as a hook, because people will look at that sort of stuff. And if they remember having a good time with their 16-bit games on the consoles that you used to play as a kid or in the arcade, then they're going to automatically have positive associations with that game. Maybe just a little bit, maybe it's just a nudge instead of a shove, but it will a lot of times get them to give a second look at a game or sort of bias them in favor of thinking that they're having a better time than they might if it had been, you know, made in a different style.
With the continuing state of rehashing and re-releasing for nostalgia purposes, is this affecting the originality in video games today and the growth of the industry?
I think a big part of the market is worried about the way gaming is going. Personally, I do want to see developers keep pushing forward, because otherwise we're going to end up with a lot of games that all play the same. And the same thing can be said about a lot of the modern games. We're getting lots and lots of first-person shooters that all look very similar. They all play the same. But like I say, I do hope that developers do keep pushing forwards with new game designs. Although I don't play modern games, I'd hate for it just to, you know, where we've got a market where everything's just being rehashed and it's just old games being redesigned which don't go anywhere, you know. That does worry me, so I'm hoping it's a bit of a trend and games developers are able to push forward and come up with new gameplay ideas.
Overall, it's great to revisit our favourite retro games. They're a quick blast of entertainment that doesn't take long to get into and still offers a big challenge. It's a great way of reigniting nostalgia with all the pixels and sounds we remember so fondly. However, don't let that put you off modern gaming. The video game industry is known for its forward thinking. From virtual tennis to virtual reality, it's a growing media that continues to explore innovative ideas and offers new gaming experiences. And while we have our classic games we know and love, why not try something new and make some more nostalgic memories for the future? Because if we keep going back instead of forward, it'll be game over for video games.